This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by American Crawl Space and Pest Services. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Trumplandia?
So yesterday, Michael Cohen was sentenced to 3 years in prison for his role in paying women to keep quiet about their affairs, alleged affairs with Donald Trump. Helping us figure this all out, including what this actually means for the president, is our favorite legal expert, my friend, Seattle attorney Ann Bremner. Ann, good morning.
Good morning.
So was 3 months as bad as you thought he'd get?
No, I thought he could get 5 years. I mean, okay. Especially when you read the memorandum from the U.S. Attorney's Office. And what the judge said is that he basically committed a smorgasbord of crimes.
So take us through, what was his arrangement with the Mueller team, and what did he not plead down or agree to? Because there's a confusion, I think, as to what he agreed he did and what the connection was to the Trump campaign.
Yeah, he did not agree up front to be a cooperating witness under the federal rules. And so he basically came into this in a way that he didn't have any prediction as to what his sentence could be, what the government would recommend, based on information that he would give them. So you have to start with that, Jason, and then look at what did he give. Well, the Mueller investigation said that he was helpful on the issue of his lying to Congress about the Trump hotel that was to be built in Russia and the timing of whether or not that was still a pending matter during the election. But then when you look at what the other federal prosecutors were saying is that, you know, he didn't really give us very much, and he didn't, you know, cooperate to the extent to where we feel he should get any kind of leniency. But on the Mueller case, he got 2 months, and then on the New York case, he got, of course, the 3 years.
So at this point, is there anything more that he can provide anyone, or is this kind of just done?
You know, Lanny Davis, his lawyer slash spokesman, said that he looks forward to giving more information. And he said that that could be in a congressional setting. Well, the fact is, legally, he could come forward with more information and get time taken off his sentence under a rule called Rule 35. So is he basically saying he took a gamble, thinking he might get probation yesterday, and then he could walk away? But if he got time, he could come back and offer more information. We don't know. But the fact is, they're saying there's a lot more that he had that he didn't give over.
Now, sometimes when we talk about these sentences, we'll say, oh, well, he'll only have to serve a portion of it if he has good behavior. But that's not the case here. I mean, he's got to serve at least 85% of the time under federal law.
That's exactly right. And there's no parole. So you do the crime, you do the time.
So let's talk about what this actually means now for the president. In a series of tweets this morning, he said that he did nothing wrong. He said, quote, I never directed Michael Cohen to break the law. He was a lawyer and he is supposed to know the law. It is called advice of counsel, and a lawyer has great liability if a mistake is made. That is why they get paid. So his basic point is, assuming he did in fact acknowledge a payment to the National Enquirer and Stormy Daniels to basically keep everyone quiet, he's saying it appears that his lawyer said it was kosher, it was in favor of the law, there's no violation. Does that protect President Trump? Does there need to be criminal intent?
Well, basically, if you do something on advice of counsel, then, you know, I think he does have a protection, especially where this is probably, in his mind, as he said, civil. But also, you know, beyond that, he's a sitting president. He can't be indicted under the Justice Department guidelines. And when you look at impeachment, it has to be a high crime or misdemeanor, something going really to oath of office. So, you know, what does this all mean for President Trump? Right now, not a lot. But what he's also saying is, this guy was my lawyer, and there is a continuing duty of loyalty of clients, you know, by a lawyer. And it always kind of amazed me that when Michael Cohen turned on the president, I mean, he turned with full force. And that, as a lawyer, you know, he's got ethical violations from here to eternity in terms of the kinds of things that he's done. But he also wasn't very loyal to his clients, that's for sure.
So is there anything in the law that suggests, even if you didn't know a law was being broken, even if an attorney was involved in this and advised you otherwise, that you're not protected?
Well, ignorance of the law is no excuse. You know, and the fact is that obviously they were trying to cover these things up. So a prosecutor would say, you know, you were in for a dime, you're in for a dollar. But, of course, you can argue, my lawyer said it was fine, and that's why you hire a lawyer.
So just based on what we know right now, would you say right now the president's not really in any trouble, but are you foreseeing the potential for the president to get in some sort of legal trouble based on what we know right now?
I'm really not, Jason. Unless we hear more from Michael Cohen, you know, they gave immunity to American media with respect to the basically killing of stories, the pay to kill some of the stories about Trump. And then you see, you know, Cohen basically coming in there and getting this kind of a sentence. If there's further information, I guess we could see some trouble. But given just procedurally, right now, he can't be indicted. And we know that the numbers aren't there for impeachment. So what else really is there, you know, against the president? And finally, you look at, and I think, you know, someone like Michael Cohen, how credible of a witness would he be? The judge was supportive of him. I mean, in some ways, the judge said, you know, we need to reward cooperation. And I think that's why the sentence was 3 years instead of five.
Any chance he'll share a cell with Paul Manafort?
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine?
That'd be the worst jailmate. Oh, my gosh.
I know. Well, at least he's still rich. He's still got a lot of the properties, at least until February the 8th when he's sentenced.
Yeah, there you go. We've been talking with Ann Bremner, Seattle attorney. Go to annbremner.com, A-N-N-E, bremner.com, to learn more about her wonderful career as an attorney and all the work that she's been doing. Ann, my friend, thank you so much for stopping by this morning. Really appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure, Jason. Thank you.
Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So let's talk about ESPN's Outside the Lines project. They do this every year where they look at all of the professional arenas and stadiums and try to figure out from a health and safety standpoint when you're purchasing food there, like, is it cool, or are you going to start puking up a storm because you ate some meat that wasn't properly stored? They said over the course of the last year, there were a total of nearly 17,000 routine inspections. They're looking at 111 different venues in this country. So we're talking about everything from football and baseball to basketball and hockey. And they said nine of the stadiums they looked at had worse rates than the community. So it means they're doing even worse than where they are located. Now, the three worst violators, Spectrum Center, which I don't know where that is, Palace of Auburn Hills, which I'm assuming is in Auburn Hills, and then American Airlines Center, which, again, I don't know where that one is either, because that's how much I know about sports. But the question is really, the only one, by the way, that I know on this list other than the local one in Safeco is Oracle Arena, which is in Oakland. I know that. And they're the best. They're the absolute best.
The first one was where the Charlotte Hornets play.
Okay, so don't go there because they're the absolute worst. Where then, specifically on this list of 111, where does Safeco fall? Safeco actually did pretty good. They come in at number 33, so they're the 33rd worst in all of it. But again, that's still in a fairly good position when you're looking at 111 stadiums. So it's not that bad.
Doesn't mean I didn't get sick. Two times this year.
Well, here's the deal.
Eating food at Safeco Field.
They had 92 total. Did you really?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see if maybe this is why. They had 92 total inspections. Of the 92, 20 of them had high-level violations. So maybe you became sick as a result of one of the 20 high-level violations that they found. They say that it would appear that the biggest one is hand-washing issues. They say during 7 inspections at various dates and locations, inspectors found violations related to inadequate hand-washing facilities. So as you're getting that hot dog, as you're getting the popcorn, as you're getting the little, what do they serve at the little bugs? Grasshoppers.
Oh, the crickets.
The crickets. They don't necessarily have good hand-washing facilities. And again, we don't know specifically which places at Safeco they looked at. So it could be that your hand washing facilities to get your crickets are fine, but the hand washing facilities to get your burger and fries or pizza or whatever, not so good. They said in August 22nd, they had an inspection of a kitchen where inspectors found raw meat stored over ready to eat food, posing a contamination threat. So that maybe is why
you got
sick.
Dripping down on it or something?
It's just the potential of that happening. And then they said they found at 9 inspections at various dates and locations, inspectors found violations related to proper cold holding temperatures for food. So the temperature wasn't where it needs to be to make sure that it's still, you know, as healthy as humanly possible to eat. When did you get sick? Do you remember what you had? Are you sure it was Safeco related?
I'm pretty sure it was some chili from the new barbecue spot.
And you just felt sick afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't anything serious. But
it could have just been it might not have been the chili.
Right.
We always assume, like, whenever we get to, we're like, okay, what did we eat the other day? And we tell ourselves a story. It's like, well, I had fish last night, so that must be it. But then you forget the fact that earlier in the day you had a, you know, a stale turkey sandwich from, you know, the market downstairs.
Well, usually the rule is, for me anyway, is when I think about that food and it makes me start to feel sick again.
But that's you tell your story, right, and you've convinced yourself that that's why you were sick. So, but again, the takeaway from this is Safeco is doing fine. And in fact, when you compare it to health inspection issues in the immediate area, like the Soto District, Pioneer Square, it's doing way better than that. And again, Pioneer Square Soto, not doing horrible either. So that's a plus.
I mean, you got to think, like, even if it were professional chefs and prep cooks and stuff, to make that much food would be difficult.
Yeah. Look, the takeaway for me on this is you're safe eating at Safeco. Or the stadium without a name. That's what we're calling it here in the building. The stadium without a name. So, again, I've got a big announcement coming up. And I'm not saying that it's directly related to the naming rights of the stadium. I'm just prepping people for a big announcement that I'm going to make in the coming weeks. But again, I'm not saying it's related specifically to the naming rights of Safeco Field, okay?
The stadium formerly known as Safeco Field.
I'm simply saying two things. Number one, I have an announcement. And number two, Safeco is going to be renamed something, and we're going to know about it soon, probably also in the course of the next few weeks. Now, are two of these announcements related? Maybe. Maybe not. I'm not making any claim other. I'm just stating. Do we got it? I'm just making two different points. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show live in the Online Training Academy studio. Really appreciate you tuning in this morning and every morning. We talk about the Seattle creep on a regular basis on this show because the bad policies here in Seattle end up spreading to you guys living in Sammamish and Edmonds and Linwood and Tacoma, Olympia. Like, they spread. And this is one of those times where I fear that a policy of Seattle, an idea of Seattle, is going to show up where you live. Because they just opened they're putting a lot of money into a huge, low-barrier homeless encampment here in the Seattle area. And per usual, the city did no meaningful outreach, and people in the neighborhood are mad because no one wants to live next to a dorm full of drug addicts and alcoholics when previously we know that low-barrier tiny homes in this area have been a disaster. The last one, Licton Springs, had to be closed down. And so now they're saying, hey, let's bring in yet another low-barrier encampment, and it's going to be dorm style. Mark Ellerbrook with the King County Department of Human Services says people can stay as long as they want in this low-barrier encampment.
People can stay indefinitely. It's not our hope, and we have expectations among all of our shelter providers about moving people into housing, but we don't set hard and fast rules.
So weird that the expectation is not that you get treatment for that addiction that you're living with, that you're suffering through, that will ultimately kill you. There's no expectation that you get a job. There's no expectation that you become self-sufficient. There's even, it sounds like, no expectation that you have any rules here. They love the whole idea of self-governing. And I don't know how many heroin addicts can self-govern. But you can stay there as long as you want. We would prefer that you not do it, but we're not going to kick you out. And so what that means is a whole bunch of people who are addicts are going to fall into a slump, and they will be aided and abetted in their complete destructive path that they're on. Because they're just going to let them stay there for as long as they want. Elizabeth Campbell is with Safe and Affordable Seattle, and she points out the city isn't interested in finding real solutions. That's not what they're about.
It's like just stunning. I'm just kind of stunned by the whole thing. They're just throwing money at the problem, and it's big money.
And the funny thing is, they're throwing the money at the problem without actually going after the root causes. Because if you're an addict and you're living out on the street, I'm willing to bet the reason you're living out on the street is because you're an addict. Hard to believe, I know. But that, to me, is my educated guess. Oh, but Jason, you know, there are lots of opioid addicts and heroin users, and they are productive in society. Yeah, okay. Does that mean they're all productive? Or is it maybe contributing, at least a little bit, to why people are currently living out on the streets? Now, the shelter living quarters will be divided into 9 dorm units that can sleep 8 people each. Cairo 7 reports it's hard to tell how many of the 72-bed shelter will be able to serve in a year, but at $4.5 million for construction costs, it adds up to $62,500 per bed. That's how much we're going to spend on someone camping out in a dorm that we're paying for while they don't have to get a job, while they don't have to get clean. And we wonder why the problem of homelessness is getting worse and not better. And of course, the added benefit to all of this is that you're going to see a lot more crime in the neighborhood.
And it does spill over into the neighborhood. You see an uptick in the amount of crime, and maybe it's not the residents doing that because we're not criminalizing homelessness, but somebody's doing it.
I went on a drive along with the SPD, two and a half, three months ago. And it was in the precinct that handles Licton Springs, which is this low barrier encampment. Within 2 minutes of leaving SPD and going near the encampment, the cops spotted two homeless people who are hanging out, loitering. And around them, we found needles. With them, we found open containers of booze. They're just hanging out. No big deal. Then we go into Licton Springs. And you know what you find out immediately? There are an awful lot of bikes there. Just random parts. All stolen. Unless I'm to believe this addict or alcoholic who's living in one of these tiny homes is just putting all of his funds into broken down bikes.
There are two bike shops nearby where you can buy bikes.
Yeah, well, maybe. Maybe that's what he did. Kind of suspicious of that because when he opened the door and came out of his little tiny home, there were lots of bike parks in there. Lots of bike parts. This is wrong. This is ultimately going to lead to more deaths and more people who are dealing with this addiction and not actually getting treatment. And that it can happen here so easily, despite pushback from the neighborhood, means activists right now who live in Everett, who live in Puyallup, who live in Bellevue, they're getting ideas. If it can happen in Seattle, it can happen here where we live. And there's almost nothing you can do to stop it unless you decide to start putting better people in positions of power. And that's kind of on you. So you got to be aware of this stuff when it happens. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. If you want to join the conversation, send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. That's an unbitter tax resolution hotline. Do you think this is something that's going to come to your neighborhood? Tell me where it is you live and why you think it's going to happen there. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. When we come back, the big local. A school lockdown in Lakewood, a fast ferry from Tacoma, and I think Hulu may have insulted Arlington. It's time for the big local brought to you by Tulalip Resort Casino.
Kent, Olympia, Everett, Sammamish.
This is the big local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Sumner, Woodinville, Des Moines.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Shout out to Tulalip Resort Casino. They let us do something called the Big Local weekday mornings at 7:30, where we completely ignore the city of Seattle so we can focus our attention on you, the communities you live in. And we start this morning at Mount Tahoma High School. Go Thunderbirds. I'm not entirely sure what a Thunderbird is. I mean, it's a bird of thunder, I suppose. But
it's like a lightning bird.
Right, like a bird that shoots lightning out of its claws.
But it's thunder.
But it's thunder. Right. So you can only hear it. You can't really see it. So they're birds that are just really loud. And I always thought it was like a digestive issue for the bird. And it's not. It's a different noise that they make. The school went into a lockdown yesterday thanks to a really, really bad lack of communication, I'm assuming, between the photography class that this all happened in or started in and the administration. So there was a report yesterday of a gun on campus, only it wasn't an actual gun, it was a toy gun, and it was being used to film a video in photography class. And so police get this report because they have the whole say something thing there. Not entirely sure who called the cops. They show up, the school goes into a lockdown for about 10 minutes, so it wasn't all that long. And they found the toy gun and they confiscated it, which I hope that they videoed the gun in time before the popo showed up and took their prop away. Because what if all of a sudden, you know, they were working on a deadline and they got to get this video done and now they're going to have to use their hand as the toy gun, which is kind of stupid.
Right. The studio's going to have their head.
Okay, that was good. I'll give you that. So here's a couple things. We don't know if the photography teacher knew about the toy gun being used in this project. We don't know if any adult there knew about it and then just didn't tell the administration or didn't tell the kid, hey, you probably shouldn't bring this gun here. Let's do something else with our time, or at least make it so that the gun clearly looks like a toy. So bring like a Nerf gun or something that's pink or neon green or whatever. We don't know if that happened. But what I think is important to note here is either a kid or a group of kids didn't think twice about bringing a toy weapon, a toy gun, to this campus, okay? And why I think that's important to note is you were told on a regular basis by activists, sometimes student activists, but most of the time adult activists, that kids going to school every single day, whether we're talking about South Tacoma and Lakewood or Everett and Linwood, that these kids are scared for their lives. Every single day, they feel the threat of gun violence on campus, and we must stop guns in their tracks so these kids can feel protected. And yet these kids brought it without living in fear, at a time where you would expect that they would be a little bit more sensitive to why they should not bring a toy gun there, right? And so is there a disconnect in that kids aren't really feeling constant fear, that maybe that fear is coming from parents, or maybe that fear is being manufactured from anti-gun activists? I just kind of thought that that was an interesting point in all of this. Now, it's certainly possible that these students right here at Mount Tahoma High School, they are the ones who are the anomalies, right? That they just happen to be disconnected from the emotional reaction of students. I'm just kind of curious about that. And so if we have any students out there and you want to send us a text, 1-800-465-8770. On this one, I don't want to hear necessarily from the parents. I want to hear from the students who are out there who listen to the show, which, by the way, props to you guys because I like propagandizing 16, 17, 18-year-old kids. Send us a text at 1-800-465-8770 and tell me if you think at your school there is that kind of fear amongst you and your classmates, or if my theory here is correct that normal kids, your average kid who's not connected to any kind of activism, isn't really feeling scared every single time they go to class every single day. Meanwhile, in Tacoma, they might get a fast ferry service from Tacoma to the city we don't talk about in this segment, and it could be happening in the next 3 to 5 years. I don't know why it would take that long. It's just a stupid
ferry boat.
Honestly,
the boat's probably already built.
This is so ridiculous that it could take that long. Tacoma City Councilmember Ryan Mello says people need options in how they get around the area.
This is the way of the future. People are clamoring for more and more modes to get to different parts of Puget Sound, and this is what this offers.
Okay. First of all, props to you. Did you hear the pun at the beginning?
This is the way of the future.
He should have said the wave of the future, not the way of the future. And number two, this is not the wave of the future. I'm sorry. I'm not saying that this is a bad idea. I'm going to, but I'm not saying that yet. This is not the way of the future. The way of the future is not taking a fast ferry anywhere. The way of the future is autonomous vehicles and the Hyperloop. And if the Hyperloop happens, that is going to revolutionize the way we travel and where we live. Because if all of a sudden you can get from Portland to Tacoma in 10 minutes on the Hyperloop, it means you can be living anywhere and work in Tacoma, or live in Tacoma and work virtually anywhere. So that's the way of the future. Now, with that said, is this an option that might make sense for some people? Sure.
As folks can see from I-5 just this morning, you know, it's getting tougher and tougher to commute on the freeways in this congested region. So the more modes to keep our economy moving, the better.
And okay, look, I'm not going to argue too much with that, but I don't know if this is going to have the change, the impact that you think it's going to have. Now, according to the Fast Ferry feasibility study, the ferry could go in one of four spots in Tacoma, either 11th Street, Old Town, Point Ruston, or Point Defiance Park. It's going to cost, just to set up in capital, $40 million, and to operate every single year, they're estimating $2.83 million. So in reality, it means it's going to cost about $900 million just in capital to set up, and the annual fee is probably going to be something like $1 billion. I'm just going to throw that out there and go really, really high so we can set expectations too high and then feel good about it. But they're undershooting this like every government agency tends to. Now, depending on how you travel right now, it's not really going to show some significant time saving. So They say the fast ferry is going to take between 43 minutes and 55 minutes. It kind of depends on when you actually get it. If you get on it right when it starts loading, you're going to have to wait some time before they leave. But let's just go then with the average of that, about 48 minutes or so. Okay, so 48 minutes from one of these spots into the port of Seattle. Right now, if you drive on a good day, on your average day, it's about 50 minutes. Your average commute time from Tacoma to Seattle in drive time is about 50 to 60 minutes. Now,
to your office.
Yeah. And so I'm saying now, if things are particularly bad, there's an overturned truck on I-5 or something, then it's going to take you about 2 hours. But that's not, the reality is that doesn't happen every single day. So let's just go with the high end of 60-ish minutes. So you can take the ferry and save about 10-ish minutes or so. Okay, that's number one. If you take the Sounder train right now, it takes about 62 minutes. So that's not, again, about 10 minutes saving. The express bus takes between 65 and 80 minutes. So again, you're talking about 10-ish to 20 minutes maybe in total saving. Now you think about that and you say, okay, you know what? I value my time. That's 10 extra minutes I get to spend with my kids or my husband or my wife, whatever it is. Are you willing to pay $22 every single day for that? Because one-way tickets are $11. Now, assuming, let's just for the sake of argument go with that without any deals if you buy like a monthly pass. Let's just go with $11. Do you want to spend an extra $110 a week? Do you want to spend an extra $5,200 a year on that service when you can just as easily drive or take the Sounder train or take the bus? And you say to yourself, okay, well, let's try to figure this out. How much am I spending on gas? Gas prices aren't that high right now. And depending on the type of car you're driving, you're not gassing it up every single week. Insurance, you'll have some savings associated with not driving as many miles. I just don't know if the math works out. Plus, are you saving $5,200 a year if you give up the car?
You are paying for parking, though, if you work in Seattle. Sometimes. $20.
Sometimes.
Even. Yeah. But I think all of this estimation is assuming that you work at Coleman Dock.
Yeah, exactly. And so let's add to that. So you get to the dock in Seattle, then you're going to either walk to, let's say, perfect scenario, you work 5-minute walk from the dock, which no one does, but let's just go with that. Or you have to hop on a bus, which means you're going to have to wait for the bus to get there, take multiple stops to wherever it is you're working. I just don't see this as a viable option.
Or take an Uber.
This is good.
It's more money.
Yeah, this is what they should do. This is a good option on game days. If there's a game at Safeco that's particularly popular, if there's a Seahawks game, if there's a Sounders game that's especially popular, I would, if I lived in the Tacoma area, to avoid all the hassle, I would take the fast ferry. That makes sense to me. But for every day, I don't see this as viable. Finally, let's talk about what's going on in Arlington. They're in the top 10 communities vying for a spot on season 4 of the Small Business Revolution, Main Street, a show hosted by Ty Pennington on Hulu that I've never heard of. If you win, here's what you get. $500,000 divvied up amongst a whole bunch of businesses on Main Street in the form of renovation. So that's what you are pushing for. Arlington folks seem to be excited, and the businesses say, this is exciting times. You're going to get some... Isn't it an insult? They're saying you have one of the 10 worst Main Streets in the entire country, and we want to have to put a lot of money into fixing it up. Isn't it? Should we be celebrating? It's like a backhanded compliment.
I guess so.
Right,
but
we're giving you attention. Again, I'm not saying they don't want the money and the attention. I'm just saying because I haven't been to downtown Arlington, like the Main Street area, in a while. But I remember going. Where did we go? Tilly Diner? Is that what it's called? You can send us a text if you know. It's kind of... I like it. It's quaint in Arlington. Now, maybe things have gotten significantly worse since I've been there in the last couple years, but something tells me it's not the case. It just seems like a backhanded insult.
But still cool.
You're in our top 10 because you're one of the worst in the country that's in desperate need of help, but we see potential. I mean, what if like a boyfriend, girlfriend said to you, you know what, right now, you're kind of slobbish, you're fat, you're balding, you don't really have a good job, but I see some potential in you, so I guess I'll go out on that date. Are you excited about that date, or you're like, oh, okay.
Maybe.
It just seems... No,
maybe
it
you
seems
are.
Kind of weirdly insulting. Send me a text.
Obviously, this person's out of your league, and they're willing to go on a date with you.
Like, I see potential. 1-800-465-8770. Is this an insult to folks who live in Arlington? 1-800-465-8770. It's the Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for the text messages at 1-800-465-8770. My friend Steph, she is the editor of our parent website, MyNorthwest.com. She has been going on and on and on about this crusade to get her kids to sleep in a little bit longer so that when they get to school, in her view, later in the day, later start times, they will be better prepared. And if I'm being honest, she's been insufferable about this crusade and it's driving me absolutely nuts. But now you want to know what's worse? She sent me this study that came from the UW that came out yesterday because they took a look at what was going on in the Seattle school district because they changed the times in which your kid has to start class. And they've shown some very, very good results. Horacio de la Iglesia is a UW professor of biology who was in charge of this study.
So what we saw is the students were waking up about 45 minutes later, but they were not necessarily going to bed later. And the net result was that they increased their sleep in about 35 minutes.
Now, the school district in Seattle changed their start time from 7:50 a.m. to 8:45 a.m. They did it in the fall of 2016 for high schoolers and most of the middle schools. Now, you're not getting a ton more sleep. You just heard him say that, 35 minutes. But still, I mean, that's rather considerable. Remember when we were all teens, we're like, Mom, just give me 5 more minutes. And then you get 35 more minutes. That's pretty good. Right now, as an adult, as a 36-year-old, I would literally kill someone. Literally kill someone if you could somehow give me an extra 35 minutes in the morning. I will go into, if someone can text in some sort of trick, I will go into the studio right next to me and I will strangle Darren to death. I will strangle him and say, you know, it's all worth it. It's 35 extra minutes. And you know what his dying breath will be? I feel you.
But what if I have an idea?
That's on you. This is on you then. Okay. If you have the idea, you're going to have to choose whose life is more important, yours or mine. Because I'm going to kill you to get that idea. And if you were selfless instead of selfish, you'd be willing to die for this cause.
Okay, but just hear me out here. What if we started the show at 6:30?
Can't happen.
Why not?
Because then that's 30 minutes less of the show.
Okay, never mind then.
Can't do it. So you better come
up with...
And we'd
just go to bed a half hour later.
How about this? Let's go full circle here. That idea was so bad, I want to kill you. As a result of telling us that bad idea. But to be fair, I didn't put that on the table. So I'm not going to go in there and strangle you to death. But I will think about it all morning. Teens aren't getting what they're supposed to get right now when it relates to sleep. Now, part of the reason why they're not getting it is because they're blaming essentially cell phones, computers, because that screen will keep people up and they are addicted to their phones. But the other thing is teens naturally stay up late. And when you force them to get up earlier than they should, they just don't get that good quality sleep.
Teenagers in general, you know, most parents say, well, at 10 p.m., it's time to go to bed, but they are biologically unable to fall asleep that early.
So this is good. They're getting some extra sleep. But the question is, okay, well, you told me if they got extra sleep, they would perform better in school. So what are the results on that?
We confirmed there was an increase in their grades in those classes that we studied.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, I don't know what the increase in grades were. I don't know if this was the anomaly of the kids that they looked into. But it's certainly promising, and I hope they continue to research this, because the truth is, kids aren't getting enough sleep. And they're showing up to class, and they're tired. Period number one is basically a waste, because they're still trying to wake up. And when you start your day really, really tired, again, this is from personal experience, Darren will back us up. When we start the day here, because we didn't get enough sleep the night before, we are just dragging on throughout the whole day. You would think at some point your body catches up. It never catches up. And then you're tired throughout the entire day. You go to bed maybe a little bit earlier that night, but unless you're being consistent with when you're going to bed and when you're waking up, it just never goes away. It never goes away. And so if we can do just one little tiny thing, so long as it doesn't completely take parents off of their schedule, because obviously, you know, we can say start school time at 10 a.m. Well, that's going to be incredibly difficult for parents who drive their kids to school. right? Because most jobs don't start at 10 a.m. Most jobs start between 8 and 9 o'clock. And so with this modest bump of start times, I think for the most part, the parents who are in positions where they have to take their kids to school, they can handle this. So this is promising. So Steph, who is in the Mukilteo School District, she immediately took this study and she sent it to the superintendent there. She's just going to hound everybody there. So if, by the way, if you're in Mukilteo and you don't want to have to deal with this, you should email Steph at mynorthwest.com. She's in charge. She's the crusader. This is good. I wish we had this when I was in school. Although we commuted about 45 minutes in L.A. traffic to get to my, because I went to a private school in West Hollywood and we lived in the San Fernando Valley. So I had to get up crazy early. I would kind of sleep in the car, so it would be a little bit better, but it's hard to sleep in the car.